Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for culturalmining.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. 15 years ago, in the fall of 1998 in Wyoming, early one morning, a 20-year-old man was found tied to a wooden fence. His name was Matt Shepard, and he was beaten nearly to death. Matt was gay, on the prairie, murdered in Laramie, Wyoming by two men in a notorious case of gay bashing. When he died later in hospital, his case had become emblematic of hate crimes against LGBT youth. Afterwards, his parents fought to expose and expunge homophobic violence, and his name is forever associated with this movement. His death is well known, but his life is not. What about his family, his friends, his likes, his dislikes, and his personal history? Well, a new documentary called Matt Shepard is a Friend of Mine fills that gap. It tells about his life before he died. It's a tender, personal story told by a woman who knew him well. Her name is Michelle Hussway, and she made this film, which opens tonight in Toronto, and I'm very pleased to have Michelle here to tell us more about it. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming.
Of course.
So I really enjoyed, it was a very moving film to me, but how did you first meet Matt Shepard?
Matt and I met in high school. We went to an international boarding school together in Switzerland. He was a few grades ahead of me, so we didn't have classes together, but we met and grew close through the theater. We both really enjoyed acting on stage. And, you know, from the long hours of rehearsal and practicing, we got to know each other quite well.
And why was he in Switzerland?
His father was working at an oil company in Saudi Arabia, and they don't have American schooling past, I believe, like 9th or 10th grade. So Matt needed to be shipped elsewhere for high school education, and they chose Switzerland, probably, I think, to kind of expand his horizons and to see other parts of the world.
And what were your first impressions of him when you met him?
I thought that Matt was really shy. And I think he was to a certain extent, but that probably had a lot to do with him being homesick and missing Wyoming and missing his family. But soon enough, I saw him really blossom, and I got to know his true self. And that was one of a person who was very kind and gregarious. He loved people, was a true extrovert in that sense. And I just learned a lot from his friendship, and I learned how to be kind and compassionate to everyone, the way Matt was. I saw him as a kind of a big brother type.
And what grade was he in?
He was a junior in high school. Yeah.
And you knew him
for those, his last 2 years in high school. And right. Then we kept in touch after he left school. Yeah.
And you say you got to know him better when you learned his true self. Did he come out to you?
He did not come out to me, unfortunately. And we discussed that in the film, how, I don't know, I just felt that maybe I could have supported him, you know, a little bit more. But those are the kinds of questions you think of when, you know, a person leaves you and you have these natural kind of regrets.
I'm speaking with Michelle Hussway, the director of the documentary Matt Shepard is a Friend of Mine. So after his beating in Wyoming, he was sent to hospital. He didn't die immediately. Can you tell me what happened then?
Sure. Well, they found Matt in the prairie 18 hours after his attack, and he had suffered tremendous injuries. I believe he was struck 18 times in the head.
With a gun?
With the butt of a gun. Magnum 357, or 357 Magnum, excuse me. And I think they tore his ear away in the process of the beating. I think his brain stem, there was some major injury to his brain stem. So he was just in a coma, hanging on for life for those 5 days.
And where were his parents at the time?
His parents were all the way in Saudi Arabia, and that's a whole world away. So when they got the call, they couldn't leave right away because you have to get a visa and then the plane ticket and then the flight itself is basically 24 hours. So I just think about that a lot. Think about that horror that they had to endure and just not being with him, getting to be with him immediately. It must have been horrible.
But did they come back before he had died?
Yes, fortunately, they made it to his bedside in time, and they were able to be with him. And I think he died with his entire family present in the room, with his mother and brother holding his hand.
Now, this is a difficult question, but he was in Wyoming, in a sort of a distant part of America, not a highly populated area, and yet, for some reason, his story was picked up by the press. Why did that happen? How did that happen?
It's a question we grapple with to this day. It's very strange because there were hate crimes that happened, of course, before Matt Shepard and continue after, unfortunately. But I think there are several reasons that Matt Shepard's story was the one that captured the world's attention, one being the fact that he looked so innocent and so fragile. He truly looked like a boy next door that in some way everyone could kind of relate to his visage, and they saw sort of a reflection of themselves in him. So that contrasted quite starkly with just the egregiousness of the crime and how horrible it was, the brutality of it. It just did not make sense.
These were the days before, well, Facebook and Twitter. How did the word start to spread initially?
I think the story initially was spread through his friend Walt Bolden. He contacted several groups, and I think it got picked up on the Associated Press. And then from there, it just spread like wildfire.
Could you because you describe him as, well, he's almost angelic. Tell me, what did he look like when you knew him in high school?
Matt was really small. I'm only 4'11", so he was just a few inches taller than me.
Really?
Yeah, and probably weighed less than me, too. He was very, very slight. So I think that kind of added to, you know, the sort of idea of him being fragile. He was just
thin,
very
with
small.
Blonde hair. I've seen still photos from your film, but I've never seen him face-to-face, so I didn't realize he was that.
Yeah, he was very
tiny.
Small. Yeah. I think when the officer who cut him off the fence found him, they initially thought he was a 12-year-old boy.
Oh, my God. So moving on to another topic, he's become emblematic of the drive for anti-hate crime legislation. So critics say we already have punishments for things like we have sentencing for murder and crimes like that, which are as harsh as they can do. Why have a second type of crime?
Hate crimes are different because when you attack someone or their property because of bias, because of who they are, what you're doing is also sending a message to that community in which they belong to that they are in fact second-class citizens. And it's the government now sees it as an act of terrorism, really. So these kinds of crimes are very detrimental to our society as a whole.
So you knew him when he was living in Switzerland, and he had lived at various international sites and actually traveled the world. What drove him back to Wyoming? Why? Why did he move back there?
Wyoming is his home. And after traveling so much, and also in the film we discuss, he underwent a lot of trauma after an attack in Marrakesh. He was really kind of finding himself and was searching for his place in the world and for safety. Safety was a big concern for him. So after exploring and traveling all over, I think he just had this inclination to go home and to put down roots. And, you know, he went back to the school where his parents had attended, and he thought that this was going to be his home. And we all thought, his family thought, that he was on the right track.
So he was at the University of Wyoming when he was killed?
Yes, he was at the University of Wyoming in Laramie.
And in your film, it says he came out while he was at university in Wyoming.
No, he came out actually in Catawba College. So Matt, you know, he had this sort of nomadic nature. So after he graduated, he initially went to Catawba College in North Carolina.
Oh, okay.
But was unhappy there. But that's where he came out. He had a boyfriend, and, you know, he came out to a few people, and including his family. And then, he was unhappy and decided to move back to Wyoming. So he was already out in Wyoming.
Oh, okay. So afterwards, and until now, his parents, Dennis and Judy, they start a foundation. What is their aim? What is their goal?
The Matthew Shepard Foundation's mission is to really erase hate and replace it with understanding, compassion, and acceptance. And it sounds very, you know, broad and abstract, but what they really know how to do is just share their personal story, share their love for their son, and spread that message across the world. So they've traveled to God knows how many states and how many countries, sharing what happened to them and inspiring others. I've really always admired how they've been able to take this horrific pain and trauma and transform it into something positive and hopeful for the rest of the world.
Now, there have been a series of plays, stage plays, about the crime and what happened, the Laramie Project. Have you seen that?
I have seen the Laramie Project.
What made you want to make a film about his story?
Sure. The Laramie Project is amazing and really, really honorable. And what it does really well is capture the attitudes of the community at this time. But it shows what happened to Matt as this event and how it had an effect on the community and the world, sort of this ripple effect. However, it doesn't really capture at all who Matt was as a human being. And that story can only be told from people who knew him and loved him. So I feel our film and this play is very complementary. They're very complementary. Our film is specifically about the person behind the symbol and showing him as a flawed human being, just like all of us, who had joys and struggles, who was sad and happy, and he had a family who loved and supported him.
When you made the film, you included an incredible amount of still photos, news footage, video recordings, letters. How did you get access to this? Where did you find it?
A lot of that was because of Judy and Dennis Shepard. They had kept a box of Matt's belongings, including this beat-up cardboard box that Matt brought with him just from place to place as he moved. And inside, we discovered all of these things that are showcased in the film: his journal entries, poems, unsent letters to his friends and family. And we saw that as a true gift, because we were able to have Matt narrate his story and give back the voice that he was robbed of. So I think it's just an amazing through line throughout the whole film.
So you're touring with his parents. What is the message you want viewers to take away from this film after viewing it?
I think there are several messages. At the core, since I'm his friend, I really would like people to begin to see Matt as more than just the way he died. He's not just a victim known for, you know, being tied up on a fence because he was gay. In fact, he was an incredible friend to me and my other friends. He was a son and a brother. And again, he was a human being. He wasn't a martyr. He wasn't perfect. He was just trying to find his place in the world. And that's something I think we can all relate to. So that's the message I really would like to get out there. And I really would like people to reengage with that outrage and that anger we felt back in 1998 when we heard about what happened to Matt. And hopefully it challenges them to want to live a life that's authentic and full of compassion and acceptance for others.
Well, it's a very important story and one you told very well.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for talking with me, Michelle.
You're very welcome.
I've been speaking with Michelle Hussway, whose documentary, Matt Shepard is a Friend of Mine, opens today at the Carlton Cinema in Toronto. For more information, go to mattshepardisafriendofmine.com. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, for CIUT 89.5 FM, and my website, culturalmining.com.